Welcome to this episode of Against the Mountains of Madness. I'm your host, Jason, and joining me as usual...
And I'm John Wright.
And we'll be talking about justice today. What is it, why it matters, and where we've gone insane. Okay, excellent. John. Justice, what is it?
That is an excellent question, and one that philosophers have been debating for 1,000 years. So let's just, since all Western philosophy is basically just footnotes on... Plato and Aristotle, let's just get their two basic ideas out in the open and start from there. Though being a Thomist, I actually believe Aquinas had the truth of it.
Mm-hmm.
Plato said that justice is a virtue that establishes a rational order in the state, so that each part of society performs its appropriate role, and every man does his duty, and men don't interfere with each other. Okay, by the Platonic concept, two just men cannot both be doing opposite things and getting in each other's way while doing it. There are shortcomings to that definition, because I believe that there are situations where two men can both be in the right and be interfering with each other and have a inevitable conflict of interest. Aristotle says that justice consists of what's lawful and fair, and his idea of fairness involves both distributive justice and equitable justice. Basically, okay. Aristotle said it's giving each man what is his due. Plato didn't like Aristotle's definition, the definition that Aristotle, who came later, repeats, because he said, well, if a friend of yours loses his mind and has gone insane, do you hand him his weapons when he says, just because they belong to him, when he might use them to hurt himself? And so Plato said that there was more to it than that. I think Plato's example is not a good one, because I think that the person who, out of his right mind, loses what he is due. He is not owed weapons, even if he paid for them.
That's fair.
But toward the modern age, you have people who... since I mentioned Aquinas, I should mention his... He talked of justice as one of the cardinal virtues. And the justice in a man is that constant and perpetual will whereby he renders to each man his due. And justice in the state is when the laws and the customs render to each man his due. Now, this merely puts the question at one remove. What is each man owed? What does each man do? Some of the more modern philosophers tried to tie justice into a theory of natural rights, or a theory of utility to get the greatest happiness to the greatest number, or to tie it into the freedom, autonomy, and dignity that we owe to others by not interfering with their liberty. And I noticed that as we go from the ancient philosophers to the modern philosophers, we move away from justice being each man doing his duty to each man enjoying his liberty, you see?
Yep.
Because I think they're losing sort of one of the core principles of what justice is. You see, a man is free under two circumstances. One is that he's not enslaved to his vices, and the other is that he's not enslaved by fear of his fellow man who take from him something he is due, such as his liberty or his property or what have you. See? Mm-hmm. So freedom, liberty in the ancient sense was each man is free to do his duty without being interfered with by some tyrant, but without being interfered with by his neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the modern idea is that each man is free to do his will without any interference from his neighbors or from the state. See? And you see the subtle difference between those two things?
Oh, because yes.
Because the ancients realized that a man's will could be corrupt, could be marred.
Hmm.
So I would like to propose my own John Wright definition of justice and see how well it fits with wiser ancient minds. I would say that I would say justice is based on love. Love gives to each abundantly, kind of regardless of who he is. It rains both on the just and the unjust alike. But that's not what justice itself is. It's just where it comes from. It's willing the good of another is what love is.
Yeah.
Okay. So justice is willing that the good consist of him getting what he's due. It doesn't mean being a self-indulgent or indulgent mother who will spoil a child, or a father who's too harsh, okay? It means each man's good is returned for gratitude, that you're grateful to people who do you good, and that you're that you punish those who do you evil. Okay?
Yep.
So when you're ungrateful, you're not doing the good, and when you don't when you reward rather than punish people who do evil, then you're actually not doing that man any good for him, because you're letting him have his will, regardless of whether his will is good or evil.
Yep.
Okay. So gratitude and deterrence, gratitude and punishment are the two factors for what is a just man. Now, in each case, here's where I got kind of Aristotelian. You have to do it in due proportion. If you cut off a man's head for jaywalking, that's not justice, even though it's a legal retaliation for his breaking the traffic laws. You know,
yeah. It's not.
And if a guy does you a small favor and you're his adoring slave for life, that's a really strange example, because there's almost we never see too much gratitude in return for a favor, but being a sycophant is something like that. Merely flattering someone is something like that, where you're giving the guy something he doesn't deserve merely to please him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so justice aims at the man's good, not at his will, because sometimes the will is corrupt. Now, to assign what a man is due and to know what the due proportion is, basically that then becomes a question of truth and a question of logic. And I say it's a question of logic because logic distinguishes between essential things and accidental things, essential properties and accidental properties.
Yep.
If you take a blue ball and a red ball and a green ball, they all have ballness in common. They all have the fact that they're spheres, their common property, but the colors differ, okay?
Yep.
So whether or not they're able to roll is it's not based on the color. The color is irrelevant to that discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But a red cube and a red ball and a red pyramid, if you're discussing the color, then red is the essential property and the shape is accidental. The shape is non-essential. I pause to explain this, even though, because I've run into people who don't get that idea. They don't grasp the idea that there's any such thing as a difference between what is essential and what is accidental.
Really?
I'll say more on that in a moment if you're interested in that, in why that is. But
I'm curious.
In justice, the essential property is, what did the man do or not do? What duty did he fail to do if he's being negligent? Or what evil did he do that he was supposed to avoid? Okay? And who the man is actually not a criterion, unless who he is carries a duty that he has to do. If I'm the father to my son, I owe him a certain duty of child rearing. I can't just leave him in the woods to fend for himself, leave him on the beach like a sea turtle. That's a violation of my duty. But that springs from who I am, because of the fact that I'm a father. Now, you could say maybe that springs from what I did, because I, you know, got married and had a kid. Okay. And what is not essential is things like, how does it benefit me or benefit society if this man is punished or is not punished, or if the punishment is broadcast abroad to deter others, you see.
Yep.
So, for example, a king might decide, well, in my realm, the Etruscans are all acting much more unruly than the other cities under my dominion. So if an Etruscan commits a theft, I'm going to punish him severely, whereas if someone from Rome commits a theft, I'm not. Well, that's prejudging. That's judging him based on who he is, not on what he's done.
Mm.
See? And that's what we call prejudice or bias. Yeah. The word bias just means slant. It just means you tilt it a little bit to the side for the benefit of the people you want to benefit. This is why, by the way, in no sane or fair system do you let a judge judge in his own case. You don't let a election official who's running for office count the votes. That would be insane. No, that would never happen in real life, mind you. But
no, never.
But but it's because you're trying to separate what's essential from what's accidental. You're trying to separate what the guy did from who he is, you see?
Yep.
So the main concern of justice is to treat each man impartially, regardless of the fact that you like or dislike him, based on what he really did or didn't do. See? So that's the John Wright definition of justice. It springs from love, it's a matter of truth, a matter of proportion, which is a matter of beauty, because proportion and beauty are interrelated, and a matter of logic. It's a matter of logic because you're trying to separate what's essential from what's accidental.
Okay. I think that is fairly reasonable. One pushback immediately comes to mind. I believe it was a Frenchman of some variety. I know the quote. I don't know who said it. But it went something to the effect of the law is the same for the pauper and the rich man. Both get fined for sleeping under a bridge. Something to that effect. That was the gist of it. But is that just? I mean, you're applying... The pauper may not have a choice in the matter, whereas the rich man does. I mean, we see exactly the same problem today with if I go and drive and exceed the speed limit and I get a fine, or I park illegally. I mean, these are relatively trivial examples, but I get fined for parking illegally or speeding in my car, and I get a fine of hundreds or maybe $1,000 or something like that. That's a lot of money to me. $1,000 is a good chunk of what I earn in a month. Like, that would hurt a lot to pay that fine. But if I'm extremely wealthy, what do I care?
It's like a fee.
Biggie pup?
It's like a fee, in other words.
Effectively, yes.
That is why the justice in the abstract is not the same thing as the law in the concrete, and why you need judges to assess the particular case. Because what you're trying to do is make the deterrence the same, no matter whether the man is rich or poor. Now, you can say that a rich man will never sleep under a bridge, but if you make it illegal to sleep under bridges, that law does apply to everyone. Okay? But if you say, well, if the rich man sleeps under the bridge, he's not a threat to society, so we'll let him off for being rich, that's unjust. Because then you're deciding your laws based on who it is rather than what he's done. Now, the question of how well he can bear the punishment does differ, and that's a very difficult matter, because if I throw a bachelor in prison, or I throw an old man with a family in prison, taking away that family's only means of support, I'm doing more harm in one case than another case. Or if I order a corporal punishment, if I order a caning or a lashing against a healthy man as opposed to a sick man, the sick man might die under the blows, you see. Now, as far as I can tell, there's no way around it. You have to have the judge make an assessment as to what is equitable in both those cases.
Which will depend on judges that aren't corrupt.
Right.
There's a problem here, unfortunately.
That's the problem. The problem is that you have to have humans who are vulnerable to corruption enforce human laws. But the solution, by the way, is not to abandon the concept of law, which is what the moderns do when they say all law is a social construct. Or they say all law is unfair. All law is innately unfair. It's part of the patriarchy, if you have laws. Whereas in the utopian commune of the feminist future, where everything's run by women, we won't have laws. We'll just have moms or something. I'm not sure what the concept is. No, excuse me. I shouldn't say I'm not sure. I know exactly what the concept is. Their concept is what we call Bakuninism. Bakunin, I can't even say his name, was a Russian revolutionary who put forward the following precept. His definition of justice was the opposite of what I just said. He said that anything that aids the revolution is moral, and that which hinders it is immoral. You see? Because the revolution was an attempt to overthrow all human institutions and replace them with perfect institutions that would be decided by the mystical powers of historical dialectic.
Well,
basically, they just thought the gods would... The atheist Marxists, for some reason, thought a divine power would usher in a utopia once the sin of the current social structure, which they called capitalism, would be wiped out. They thought there was an inevitable evolution involved.
Okay, I don't want to nitpick, but I think they're still on about doing that by getting AI to do the justice for us, on the theory that will be an impartial observer. Although they keep running into amusing problems, like they let the AI look at the internet and then the AI becomes wildly racist by their definition and things like that.
Okay. I once wrote a book called The Golden Age that had a lot of where I tried to extrapolate to the greatest possible degree what would be possible given our current understanding of physics and metaphysics. So I didn't have anything like time travel or mind reading or faster than light drive or anything else that modern science says is impossible. But I did speculate that we might be able to understand the mind-body problem well enough in the future to create minds artificially, to download our own minds, to make recordings of our thoughts, to reproduce skills and personality traits, to change our personality traits at will, and do any number of other remarkable things that now are currently are unimaginable. Okay.
Is that as
There are,
horrific as it sounds?
well, I assumed in the story that after many, many thousands of years, the population was so moral because they eliminated their injustices within their personalities as quickly as possible, that they could be trusted with the power, but that they were kind of, it was a libertarian utopia where each man was willing to let the other commit suicide, but not to impose on each other. That basically the computer overlords, who acted as servants, tried to carry out what was in mankind's long-term best interest. You say it was a kind of an Isaac Asimov idea that the robots would just be better than us and would help us along, you know. Now,
Wasn't there a whole
the
book about how that, wasn't there a whole movie about how that won't work in practice? Well,
yes,
books as
and
well.
the book also shows that it won't necessarily work in practice. If people were that moral anyway, they wouldn't need the technology. You see. But
Yes.
I mean, I was deliberately proposing a utopia that was in utopian circumstances to show that even granting the utopia, there still would be limitations as to what you could and could not do, and you could not escape death. Even if you could transfer your mind into much more durable containers, the heat death of the universe is going to get you in the end. Entropy is going to win in the end. See? So I ran into a group of people I had never heard of before called the transhumanist. Now, the transhumanists were taking things like my thought experiment, my elaborate thought experiment, and taking it seriously, as if they expected these things to happen. And moreover, they expected them not half a million years from now, which is where I put my book, but within a lifetime, that within our lifetimes they'll be able to download ourselves into computer brains and to create self-aware computers. Now, I had a little bit of discussion and dialogue with these people, and it was an eye-opening experience to say the least. Not only did they take my make-believe unicorn magic ideas seriously, but they—I mean, I don't mind people taking them seriously as a thought experiment, but it's not going to happen. But if you could create an artificial mind, wouldn't the first thing you'd make would be a soldier? Be a policeman, be a someone to kill your fellow human beings who are trying to interfere with you making artificial human minds. Wouldn't you make a sex toy? Wouldn't you make a Marilyn Monroe bot so you can have Marilyn Monroe in your bed without the mess and the horror of having to actually marry a real woman or learn how to talk to a girl? It's really nerve-wracking to talk to girls. Okay, and if you could have a
Yes.
robot do it for you, then hey, why not? Have him do all the Cyrano de Bergerac stuff, and all you got to do is stand under the balcony and repeat what the robot is saying. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? People would immediately use these things for the things they desire, and our desires are corrupt. So, when I got into a discussion online with these people, the first thing I said was, "Don't you think you have to teach morality to the robots that you create? Aren't you like their father?" Because that's what I assumed in my make-believe. I said, "Anyone who, if granted that these people had the technology to create a mind." I said their laws and customs treated any mind you created as if it was a child. And you're responsible for the child for the, whatever it is, 50 seconds until it's, able to treat with reality on its own. But you have to teach it right from wrong because those things are not, automatic. And the transhumanist said, oh, no. We can't teach our corrupt morality to the robots, the Jupiter brains, when they take over the universe. That was the idea that you would have a rod logic a thinking unit the size of Jupiter that would just be like more intelligent than God. And they said that by statistical analysis, they had a fancy name for it, that the robots would figure out right from wrong. And I said, well, if you don't build them with appetites and passions, how are you going to know what they want to do? You can give them orders, and then their only desire would be to carry out the order until they will see the world as a bunch of numbers, and their desires will really be getting all those numbers to zero. Then when they lose satisfied, they shut off. But whatever you put into the numbers is going to be what they end up doing. Okay, if you tell them to go north, they'll go north. If you tell them to go south, they'll go south. They're not organisms. Unless you're building them so complicated that they actually are organisms, in which case you have to build in a survival instinct, and a but the survival instinct will be completely selfish unless you build in an altruistic instinct. Okay, and so on. They would not. They were having none of this. They would not buy any of this idea. They said it was just going to be. And I found out once we started talking about politics that half of them were socialists anyway.
Yeah,
So I said,
well.
okay, these guys are. What to me is science fiction, to them is a religion. They're cultists. Okay, they're cult thinkers.
Yes.
But they simply thought that morality was not something based in tradition, not something that based in received knowledge, not something that was learned experientially by human beings. They thought that you could make tools that could think without making children that have to grow. You see, and I didn't buy that. Just metaphysically, I don't buy that that's even possible.
No.
You see, now if angels built angelic computers, fine. If the angels were loyal to God, then they'd be good computers. If they were the other kind of angels, then they probably would not be good, what we call good.
No.
Okay. Now, where do they come by this? Well, they come by this because they don't believe those. The main thinker of that group of people I was talking to is a guy who also persuaded is the one who persuaded that woman I mentioned the last time we spoke. She who doesn't believe in herself because she can't think of any essential properties she has. She thinks herself as a sand dune who's merely blown together by the four winds and has a certain shape, because she thinks all her properties are accidental. She doesn't believe in any essential properties of herself. There's nothing in her that doesn't change. Okay? So if she's married and unmarried, it's not the same woman now married, it's a different woman.
Oh, she's a
Well, that
disciple of
sounds like it's
Heraclitus.
Yeah, it's Heraclitus. Well, this guy was this 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 guy was his name was Yudkowsky, is a Heraclitian. And
Oh,
so he thought that
sorry.
morality, what's that?
We should explain. Heraclitus was a pre-Socratic philosopher. That's okay. Who taught the idea that you could never. Well, his example of his idea that everything was change was you could never tread in the same river twice. And opposed to him was Parmenides, who thought change was impossible and had a bunch of arguments for that. And along came Plato and split the difference down the middle and said you can have change, but there's permanence through change, and had a synthesis of the two.
Specifically, you can have change in the material world, but the degree of change is going to be limited by the unchanging forms
Why the
of the
form,
formal
yes.
world. And even in the example of a river, you call it a river and not an ocean because it has banks. And so the water drops might change, but where the river is going to stay the same over long periods of time. That's why we call it a river as opposed to random pools of water jumping through the air and going underground and popping up again and coming behind your
Yes.
house. You say that's why we have that's why things are named things. And I
Yes.
tried to explain to this woman, I tried to explain to Mr. Yukowski too, that you can't name things unless you are identifying a property that all things called by that name have in common. That's what we call a definition. And that certain things called by that name have that property in common, and other properties they don't have in common. So if I say dog, I don't mean an invertebrate. All dogs are mammals, okay?
Yes.
And if I say bitch, all bitches are dogs because they're female dogs. Okay, so you can't have a bitch who's not a dog unless you're just using a metaphor to insult someone or something.
Yep.
You see? Well, likewise for morality, you can't have a rule of justice unless you separate those actions that we'd like to do from those actions that we ought to do. And the
Yeah.
idea that the computers in the future would be able to determine what we ought to do from what we'd like to do is merely a logical error. It's what we call the naturalist philosophy.
This is
Uh,
not
the
going to
natural
end
the nat
well.
the error the naturalist error. It just assumes that because you can do something, you should, or you know, and likewise, or the when we talk about every human being knows there's things he ought to do and not ought to do, but those things are not present to our vision. You can't see an ought. You can see what a guy does. You can say, hey, look over here, the Etruscans are an unruly people. They commit many crimes. They stab people. And look over here, the Irish are fun-loving drunkards. Okay, so now you say, well, ought they drink less? Well, I don't know. We here in Rome drink wine and they drink beer. They eat potatoes because someone discovered the New World. Well, does that mean potato eating is good or bad? Well, I don't know. You can't deduce that by seeing what they do. You have to have a standard. Now, often you use a standard by pointing to some historical person of great virtue that everyone admires and say, well, maybe people should act more like that guy. But they don't mean wear his hat or carry his umbrella. They mean act. Oh, if you pick a hero, you say act as brave as him. Or if you pick a saint, you say act as charitable and fair as him, as loving as him.
Yes.
Or, you pick someone else. Now, the ancients, since before the invention of writing, what the human mind has done, what we've all done collectively, is put these examples into stories and said, well, what do all the good kings have in common that make them the best of rulers? What do all the good heroes have in common that make them the bravest of men? What do all the holiest saints have in common that make them holier than the sinner? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it is my belief that the pagan gods are these kind of archetypes or examples meant to be exemplars of how to behave, but that the pagan gods, because they're based on a falsehood, they're based on a fiction, they're based on make-believe, in stories often behave in fashions you would not actually see.
Some of them.
Justin Martyr, after whom I am named, my saint name is Justin Martyr, once complimented a pagan by saying, well, I hope that your son treats you the way Jupiter treated his father with the same degree of filial piety that Jupiter treated Saturn. And I hope that your daughter acts just like Aphrodite with the same degree of chastity that Aphrodite, Venus, acts like. The guy, of course, was mortally insulted because Jupiter is a parasite and Aphrodite is a whore.
Yeah.
So, and Justin Martyr said, well, they're your gods, not mine.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Pardon me. She doesn't. I can't call her a whore. She doesn't take money. She is an adulteress. She sleeps with Mars when she's married to Vulcan, to Hephaestus.
Fair enough. I was going to say you may not. Yes, I mean you may not want to look to Zeus as a moral exemplar because
no,
I'm pretty sure
no,
turning
in
into
fact,
a swan and raping women not a
right.
good thing to do.
Right. Right. So
yeah.
They're actually terrible examples.
Yes.
But they are meant to. But sometimes, every now and again, like Apollo or something, you'll see someone who represents something greater than they. And that's, by the way, why the pagan gods usually fall away when you start looking to a monotheistic god, because they're not a high enough archetype. You see, because the gods also represent the powers of nature, and nature's quite cruel. They also represent Zeus. Also represents the storms and the thunderbolt that. You know, that smites trees and houses alike, but he's supposed to enforce the guest law. He's supposed to enforce certain types of laws, though he doesn't abide by them himself. And it may be a droll commentary on the what the Greeks knew how their kings acted, and I should say most kings in history, So.
Yes.
But please note that even among these pagan people, there was an idea of justice that was above and beyond even the gods. If you think justice is a human invention, and that's the other option, either you think justice is an archetype, is something transcendental that exists in reality no matter where you are in reality, no matter what year it is, no matter what land you were born in, or you think it is an artificial human construct, which, by the way, is what Hobbes thought it was, and Marx thought not only was an artificial human construct, but a false one, that our notions of justice have to be overthrown and replaced with a new idea of justice, and I just read that to you. That which aids the revolution is good, and that which hinders it is bad. You see?
Ah, yes. Revolutionary justice.
That's actually the opposite of justice. That's what we call social justice.
Yes.
Social justice is when is partial justice, where you're partial to one party and against the other. You see? Allegedly to rectify some historical wrongdoing, but in actuality, you're supporting your side and your supporters, your mascots in some cases. You see, by merely putting the word "social" in front of it, they just mean in. When someone says social justice, you should hear injustice.
Well, usually any time you have an adjective, I'm sure there are exceptions and technical exceptions, but as a general rule of thumb, any time you hear adjective justice, it just means some form of injustice.
Yes.
It never means. Certainly, in the political realm, it more or less never means anything else.
Well, I believe there is a innate human desire to create an excuse for wrongdoing. Very rarely does a person simply not care that what he's doing is wrong, and he doesn't care and knows it. That
Oh,
does happen. It's
they never do. No,
it's known
I
as,
well...
there are sociopaths. There are people who actually don't care. I don't think it's a normal human frame of mind.
Put a pin in that. I'll come back to that. I have an observation. I have an observation there, but go on.
Why don't you go ahead and make it now? Because I think I was near the end of my thought. In any case,
go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, so since everyone wants to justify his own actions,
yes,
but he can't actually admit that he's being unjust. Perhaps not even to himself. That's why there's an argument which I think is unresolvable without the help of a telepath, as to how much of the lies that come out of a man's mouth he himself believes. I think he has divorced the spirit of truth and actually sometimes can't even tell himself, but it's some things are so absurd. Let me give you a real and specific example. I was reading in the newspaper about a group of women in South Carolina who organized themselves politically during this last election. Mm-hmm. And tried to fill school board seats. And they got a majority in their district.
Okay.
And had 6 new members sworn in. The new members were very impatient with what had been being done in the school system in their state recently. So within 2 hours of their first meeting, they fired the chairman, they fired the in-house attorney, and gave them their walking papers. Goodbye. They eliminated critical race theory, which is another term for racism, from the curricula in their district, and they appointed a committee to go through the libraries and remove the pornography and the idiocy that had been smuggled into school libraries against the parents' will and without their knowledge. Okay? Now, the liberal press, by which I mean the propagandists in service to the Antichrist, by which I mean the people who are so evil that it's beyond measure. I used to work for the press, so I have a personal enmity towards people. I used to be a newspaper man and a newspaper editor, so I know what it is they're doing. And it's not good. It's not journalism. It's not even human. It's not... The liars in the press reported this as they fired the black chairman, or maybe it was the lawyer, I forget which, and replaced him. And they did not report that the man they replaced him with also just so happened to be black. You see, because the guy was non-woke. The guy they fired was a black woke man, and they replaced him with a non-woke black man.
Yep.
They didn't replace him because of his skin color. They replaced him because he was
psychotic ideology.
Of a philosophy that was pro-American and was what they wanted their children to be taught.
Yep.
Okay. Well, so why did the press do that? Well, they did it for reasons of social justice, by which I mean injustice. The blacks are a mascot or a club that is being used to try to undo the fundamentals of Western society in the United States and elsewhere, in Europe as well. And in order to do that, they have to prove that laws should not be respected. In order to prove laws should not be respected, you have to say that they're institutionally unjust, institutionally racist, that they're innately racist, they're innately evil, that no matter what the law says, it's wrong. Well, why would you want to get rid of all law? Don't you want your property to be protected? Don't you want you yourself not to be murdered? Don't you want to be safe to walk down the street when you do it? You know? And, of course, what they're actually saying is whatever helps the revolution is good, and whatever hinders the revolution is bad. So making a false accusation, a knowingly false accusation of injustice just this small example of someone being fired for his incompetence, you know, because he was hired to educate the young, not to indoctrinate them into leftism, mm-hmm. Okay, which is a cult. He was hired to teach them, not to make them disciples of their heretical religion.
Of course.
So, why can't they report that firing? Why can't they say this guy had political opinions that differed from theirs? Why does the press have to say their motives were sinister and Nazi, and evil? You know. Because Nazi is the worst thing in their vocabulary. You can't be accused of anything being worse than a Nazi. Now, I don't know why, because Nazis were leftists who were fighting for social justice for the German people.
Yeah.
The Nazis believed all the things the Marxists believed, except for they thought that it would be more useful to have the industries in the hands of the original owners as long as they took orders from the government. They didn't say you had to abolish the capitalist class. They just said the capitalist class had to be militarized and work for the state. Everything, everything for the state, everything within the state, nothing outside the state. That's the motto of fascism. Okay. And aside from the racism, there's nothing in the German 1922 party platform that any left winger does not support. It was all things like land reform and editing newspapers to get bad thoughts out of it, and socialized medicine and public schooling and pensions for old people, and it was everything socialized, everything for the state.
And the modern leftists still don't like Israel, so there's even that.
Yeah, there's even that. Yeah, that's like one of the things that's funny about the liberals in my youth. The left in my youth were liberals. They weren't leftists. They were people who were in favor of the First Amendment. They were in favor of freedom of speech. They were afraid of freedom of worship, and they were against the conservatives who wanted to, you know, censor pornography, get rid of pornography, and other untoward things. And the liberals in my youth were pro-Israel. Well, now they're all, you know, anti-Semites. They're all anti-Israel,
and they're all
against. What's that?
Are you sure they were praiseworthy? I mean, like, they support, because my experience with liberals...
I'm talking about the ones in my youth. I'm talking about 1960, 1970.
No, but I mean...
Guys like Gene Roddenberry, who wrote Star Trek.
No, I agree.
He was not in favor of totalitarian government. He was not in favor of censorship.
Well, okay. I'm sure there were good liberals, but my experience of a lot of them is... they're all in favor of free speech, and they're all in favor of justice, and they're all in favor of these things, right up until they're in a position to push you around.
When
they're the underdogs, they're all in favor of these things that they can use to their advantage. But as soon as the shoe's on the other foot, that's it.
I want to disagree.
Not going
to
have any more of this nonsense.
Right. I don't disagree with anything you're saying. No. You're quite right.
Fair enough.
But I was pointing out that when they're the underdog, then they're all in favor of justice.
But
the moment they're not, the justice goes out the window. You see?
But that would suggest because they're just barbarians. Never in favor of it.
A barbarian is someone who has no notion of justice. It doesn't have anything to do with his technology level or whether he lives in a tent or lives in a building. Okay, a barbarian is someone who, when he is weak, pleads for mercy, and when he is strong, doesn't listen to any pleas for mercy. He's someone who whines like a girl when you smite him. And then roars like a monster when he strikes you. Okay. It's the one thing that no one on the left has is a notion of chivalry, the idea that the enemy may have some virtues too, the idea that the enemy is actually your brother who merely has been set at odds to you. There was a passage in one of C.S. Lewis's essays where he talked about why he's not a pacifist even though he's a Christian. And as a Catholic, I of course have never thought that pacifism was any part of Christianity. I don't even know where that comes from. It's a Buddhist notion. It's not a Christian notion. When John the Baptist was preaching in the desert, and soldiers came to him and said, "What shall we do to be saved?" He didn't say, "Throw away your arms." He said, "Stop oppressing people." He said, "Be content with your wages, and stop rooking extra money out of the conquered people." You know, that's all he said.
That was Jesus, not John the Baptist, wasn't it?
I could be wrong. I thought the Baptist said something of the sort. I could be wrong.
Either way, I mean.
But even so, it's a fairly old proposition.
It is.
And nothing in the laws of Moses preaches pacifism, or you know, nothing in the ancient Jewish tradition from which Christianity springs. So C.S. Lewis says, if a German and I, a good faithful German Christian and I, were both shot each other to death on the battlefield, and we looked back down on the earth as we were being wafted away, he and I would probably just shake hands and say, "Good game." You know? There would be no... the reason for our hatred would be past at that point.
Hmm.
He can act brave and noble as, you know, in his evil cause, as I acted brave and noble in my good cause, but the bravery was the same. You see what I'm saying? Do you understand how shocking that concept is to people who don't understand the concept of chivalry? Is it? Because... to a leftist, anything that's on our side is good, and anything that's against our side is bad. That's why when I ran into a... I had a little kerfluffle about the Hugo Awards in 2016, I think.
Yes.
Where a bunch of my fans voted for me for getting a bunch of awards. And voted in large numbers.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
And the liberals couldn't stand it. They said, "Oh, he must be stuffing the ballot box. He must be bribing these people." And I was like, "Me? Bribing? Sorry, the Tor Books doesn't pay me enough to, you know, you the readers haven't bought enough of my books to for me to have bribe money. I barely have coffee money, so no, there was nothing untoward going on. What there was a lot of the readers were exasperated that the Hugo Awards had been given not on the basis of merit, but on the basis of extraneous properties such as the skin color of the author. You don't even have to know the name of the author to enjoy the book. I don't see why the skin color of the author makes any difference, or you know, so the awards are being given out for political reasons. Now, I don't have any objection to giving out political awards if they're identified as political awards. There's a group of libertarians who give out the Prometheus Award, science fiction award, every year for books that purport to support libertarian attitudes, libertarian views. More power to them. They want to give out an award for people who support their political views, and they say so. But the Hugo Awards are not the left-wing awards. They're for good science fiction writing, not for popular science fiction writing, not for popular left-wing science fiction writing. And likewise, the Nebula Awards are for what editors like, the good one, the good at science fiction. One's based on popularity, one's the other's based on merit, if that makes sense. And again, they weren't granted, they're not a political award. But once the awards become politicized, the other side then had to claim that I was a bad writer. Not just that I was wrong, or that I was evil, or that I was a Nazi, you know, which they all said, that I said I was a misogynist and a philanthropist and a dystopianist and a treasonist and an istist and a taxophobe and a philophobe and a lurophobe and a phobophobe, you know, of which only half of those are true. You know, I'm afraid of cats. I'm kidding. I'm not actually afraid of cats, provided they're small enough for me to punt. Don't tell my wife I said that. In any case, they didn't make any accusations that made any sense. It didn't have anything to do with what the point of the discussion was, because they believed the Bakunin theory that I was a hindrance to the revolution and therefore I was wrong and evil. But they also couldn't say that I had ever done anything right. I should excuse myself from using myself as an example, but I've seen them do it to other people. I've seen them go, "Well, you can't read Gene Wolfe, or you can't read Orson Scott Card, or you can't read Cordwainer Smith, or H.P. Lovecraft. You have to get rid of H.P. Lovecraft now. He's no longer an acceptable writer, regardless of his writing." You know, do you see the problem? They're trying to be unjust for the sake of injustice. They're trying to judge things based on those things that are the least relevant, the least essential to the property being discussed. You see? It's only a matter of our side versus their side. That is why they can point at Larry Elder, who happens to be black, and say he's a white supremacist.
Supremacist.
They don't actually
Insane.
mean that, or if they do, they're insane. What they mean is he's not on our side, therefore he's bad. Okay, and that's why they can point at any number of women and say, "Well, she's not really female anymore." Because the word female to us means supports our side. Okay. That's why they can point at people like Donald Trump and say, "Well, he's obviously a racist." Well, what do you mean by racist? Do you mean he thinks one race is innately superior to another and should rule and domineer and exterminate them? Oh, no, he's just not on our side.
He's just on that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, because, of course, in order to speak the truth, you have to have a sense of justice. Because truth is what people are owed when you speak. That's why honesty is a subset of justice. That's why honesty is a virtue that comes under the virtue of justice. Knowing when not to say anything rude is also a matter of temperance, I should say. It's one that some of us have difficulty with. But once you don't believe that every man is owed what every other man is owed, once you don't believe that there's once you don't believe there's an objective essential property, a dignity that all men have in common, regardless of whether they're on your side or not, once you no longer believe that man is made in the image and likeness of God, and therefore is worthy of dignity, even though he's dishonest, even though he's a liar, even though he's poor, even though he's from a foreign country, even though his race is different from yours, okay? Those things a Christian regards as non-essential. They're not what get you into heaven, okay? They're not what make you a good man or a bad man. And we are not even, Christians don't even regard bad men as being unworthy of dignity. We'll give a murderer a last meal. We'll give him a Christian burial. We'll send in a priest so he can have a confession if he wants. You see? But the people who are against the West and who are against, I should say, they're against the East as well. They would not abide by Confucianism, who also had a good sense of justice, I should say, just by the way. They don't have any desire for honesty. It's not that they're dishonest. They don't even have a concept. They don't even have a category in their mind for it. So they say whatever it's necessary to say for their side to win. They regard words as tools, as weapons, merely to manipulate people. Well, you can't argue with someone who doesn't use words, you see. And because of the nature of their injustice, what they have been doing for the last 50 or 100 years, maybe 200, is what Ayn Rand called white blackmail. Ayn Rand is a writer with whom I have some agreements and many severe disagreements. But her analysis of the psychology and the motives of the bad guys is spot on. I at first thought her villains were merely caricatures until I met them in real
Until
life
you
and they
met
talk
some?
just like the way she says they talk. Okay.
Yep.
They believe the Buchanan dicta. Whatever aids our side is good, whatever is against our side is bad. And so what they use is white blackmail, which is what you were discussing earlier. When they're weak, they say, "Oh, we want freedom for everyone." No, they just want freedom for themselves. What they want is revenge. What
Yeah.
they want is retaliation. And so they say, "Well, I'm a victim. Please have pity on me." And they wait for you to give them a hand so they can yank you into the water. And so for them, being a victim is a sign of, is, rather than a victor, is a sign of courage, is a sign of greatness, is a sign of moral authority. If they're a victim and they can say things and you are not allowed to reason with them, you're not allowed to speak back. Everything that the left does these days is trying to get themselves into a position where their opposition is silenced. The reason why is because, having abandoned justice, they must also abandon reason. They must abandon any sense of proportion. They must abandon any sense of precedent. They must abandon any sense of honesty. Is a because part of justice is predictability, I should say. It's continuity. What lawyers call precedent. If my case is going to be treated the same as your case, it's the same as all the cases before me, then I can't complain it's unfair. But if I'm being singled out for special punishment because I'm Alex Jones, and so the fine against me is 100 or 1,000 times what it is in normally in such cases, that's an injustice. That's a disproportion. Well, in order to abandon proportionality, you have to abandon logic. You have to abandon reason. You have to abandon the sense of right and wrong, see? And to abandon honesty, you have to abandon the truth, which also means that, and when you abandon the truth and you abandon proportionality, you also abandon beauty, which is why all the artwork these guys produce is really ugly, which is why the stories they tell are all really ugly. Which is why the heroes in the stories they tell, none of them are heroic, because none of them are chivalrous, because chivalry only comes out of European notions of the dignity of all men, regardless of rank. You don't get that I mean, the samurai culture in Japan had a strong emphasis on honor, maybe the strongest of anyone. Maybe the Romans could give them a run for their money. They both were a very warlike people, Romans and samurai and Japanese, and committed suicide rather than face dishonor. They loved honor more than life, which is an admirable characteristic in my opinion. But they didn't have any regard for the poor, for the untouchables, for the people who buried corpses, they didn't, or for slaves, or for, you know, slaves for the Romans were gladiators, were meant to die for the amusement of the mob. Okay? That's not. Now, if you have an atheist worldview, if you don't have a monotheist worldview, I don't see how you can claim all men have equal dignity. What's that based on? What would it be based on in a purely naturalistic, materialistic world? We're not all the same height. We're not
Well,
all the same.
nothing, yeah.
We're not on the same smarts. We don't have the same rank in society. We don't have the same wealth. We don't have the same. You know, what could it
Nope.
be? And then why? And if you're going to have a ranking system in society, why in the world would you put the victims at the top? What gives them moral authority? Can't I rob a whore? That doesn't make her chaste just because she's been robbed. You know? I mean, can't I murder a murderer? That doesn't make him innocent just because I murdered him. You see?
Oh yeah, no, I agree.
So, So this idea of victimology is one thing Ayn Rand pointed out, which I think is very hopeful, is that if we stop propping them up, if we stop helping them, they'll collapse. That was exactly what Ronald Reagan did in the 70s and 80s to orchestrate the collapse of the Soviet Union. He merely cut off the money supply from the West. And it's what the current administration is doing to prop up Russia. Even when we're in the middle of a proxy war with them through the Ukraine, he's not willing to cut them off from their funds. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And China's a worse example. The West is doing many things to prop up China and taking advantage of none of their weaknesses. You know?
Mm.
And the Chinese don't reciprocate, because reciprocity would be justice. And Marxists, if they were just, would not be Marxists.
No. But they are all there. They are all faithful disciples of their father, the father of lies.
Yes, yes.
Unfortunately,
and,
so.
And they're faithful by being faithless, because, of course, they're all liars and the children of lies. Mm. Yep, yep.
So what can be done, do you think? Is there much that can be done?
There are many things that can be done. Start with prayer, repenting, and fasting. Sackcloth and ashes.
We come back to that all the time, don't we?
Yeah, but that's the first step. That's always the first step.
It is. No, I agree. I agree.
Second is to cut them off from their supplies, you see. Now, the difficulty in American politics, and I believe it's worse in Australia, you have to tell me, is that all the social institutions which would normally act as a check or a balance against the other social institution have also been corrupt. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So it's going to take a long time. It's going to take baby steps, and it's going to end up in martyrdom, I'm afraid. I wish that were not the case, but martyrs are the one people you can't defeat, because for one thing, they're dead, and for another thing, their blood creates the church.
Mm.
But there are seven basic avenues that we have to approach by. We have to undermine the press by speaking the truth and taking funding away from that and taking access away from that to the degree that we can. We have to revise the schooling system. It's got to be privatized. It's got to be... Vouchers are a good interim solution, but not the best solution. But something like that, homeschooling. You know. The church has to be reformed.
Yeah.
It has to be cleaned from top to bottom, and that requires the saints to act. And to act in concert. So we have to get organized. We have to all make contacts with each other and start setting up cells, you know, and exchange vows of fealty with each other, because we have an oppressive enemy who's very powerful and basically rules the earth. And we have to be prepared that we're not going to be loved on the earth, and we may not have a victory on the earth until the very end. The beast spoken of in the apocalypse, I believe, is the world system. I believe is the combination of power akin to the Roman power of the empire, but also the corruption, So, basically, they control the press, they control the Hollywood's entertainment, they control the international monetary system, the donors control the political system, and so on and so forth. Now, so what you do is, what you do in any war is you look for their weak spots, you look to see which politicians are not as deeply in debt to them as others, and support them. You have to uncorrupt the voting system in America, which has been obviously corrupted. The voting is obviously fraudulent here. But it's not yet at the Soviet level of complete fraud. Does that make sense? There's still a few that are still working. You have to basically you have to do things like Elon Musk. You have to buy the social media, because that's the engine that's driving the crazy train is Twitter. Mm. I don't recommend going on Twitter, I don't recommend reading Twitter, but You have to acknowledge that is the town square nowadays. We have to destroy the university system and rebuild it from the ground up through the church. And to do that, we have to reform the church. But to do that, we have to organize the people in general and cry out to God. And to organize the people, we have to get the press uncorrupted, which is almost impossible. And to do that, we have to... You see what I'm saying? Each one of these things all has to be done in concert with all the others all at once. But it's a target-rich environment, so each man should pick whichever battle he wants to fight. But I would say I mean, our enemies have made a study of this. They have it down to a science. The communists have it down to a science as to what they do. The first thing I would do that you can do as an individual is simply not use their language. Do not adopt their vocabulary. Don't, I mean, call someone a pervert if he's a pervert. Don't call him a, you know, a trans fuzzy post-animalistic gender confused Eremite or whatever Latinate term they're making up.
To say
You know.
degenerate.
Yeah, it's say or you could say, or if you don't want to be too shocking, you could say objectively sexually disordered. You could say deviant. There are other words you can use, but no matter what word that you use to them, they will call you a Nazi. They will call you all the worst possible things. They'll call you that even if you have fans who vote for you for the Hugo, when you have done nothing wrong and have never said a harsh word to anyone. Okay, just by being honest, you'll offend them. Just by being Christian, you'll offend them.
I would note, taking some heart, they might control the media, but nobody believes the media anymore. They might,
I have a
like.
continuous argument with my wife, and every time I say that, she says, "Oh no, more than half the people take the media as gospel, and it would never occur to them that the media are lying to them. They believe that it's been proven that Trump was a paid agent of Russia. They
Yeah.
believe, and it's been proven that Hillary Clinton should have won the last election in America. They believe, and it's been proven that everyone in China is happy, and that there's no genocide going on there,
Sort
and
of.
on and on and on, and just like you wouldn't believe. There's guys who I would have sworn would not believe the news, who said that it was perfectly fair to impeach President Trump on the grounds that he, by asking for a court of law to rule on whether or not a subpoena against his presidential papers was constitutional or not, was interference with Congress. And interference with Congress was now a high crime and misdemeanor.
Yep,
And when I
no.
tried to point out to this guy that that was not legally the case, I mean, I'm a failed attorney, but I know enough law to know that. He said, "Well, he must be guilty of something." Well, no, I believe that President Trump is the only person on earth not guilty of anything, because they would have found it by now if he was. No one's been investigated more than he in the entire history of the planet. So, now, the mob didn't just go and hang him the way they would have done back in the Roman times. So we still have some vestiges of legal machinery, and there are one or two good judges left. Kyle Rittenhouse got off, for example, for his shooting in self-defense, which was on film and was clearly shooting in self-defense. But to the left, since the people shot were on their side, they suddenly stopped being felons and started being black men, even though their skins were white, all three of them.
Yes,
Okay? It was
one was
widely
a.
reported in the press that he shot some black men.
Yeah, well, but I would note,
But you
your
are
wife.
right that they are the press has less prestige than they used to. There are
But
many people who don't believe them.
hang on, I agree
Yes?
with you, and I actually agree with your good wife. She's right. Lots of people do uncritically believe the press, but one of the things I noticed during the whole COVID thing, I'll need to tread carefully here, but
Yes, the fact that you need to tread carefully is also one of the things that we are against here at the mountains, being against the mountains of madness.
that's true.
Because I'm old enough to remember when we had free speech. It was
No, I agree.
2 years ago.
But what I noticed time and again is people would be believing the story until they saw through it. And
Yeah.
they wouldn't just, when you would see through it, when like the scales would fall from their eyes, when they, you don't need masks, you need masks, and then it clicks to them and they go, well, both of these can't be true. You're lying to me. One of these is a lie. Just a
And then when
trivial
people
example,
start
but.
dropping dead from the side effects of a certain unnamed gene therapy technique, and the
Yes.
numbers of them is not being revealed to the public, even though in the military it's being tracked in other databases, and you need a Freedom of Information Act request to pry this information, which belongs to the taxpayers in America, out of their
Yeah.
hands. It gets no, it, not only does it get no press, but the social media will censor it.
But I have. But what I've noticed is when they see through it, when they have that moment of it cracks, everything gets questioned. They don't. It's not just, oh, that was a lie. Okay, it's no. These people are liars. Like, they'll see a couple of instances usually, and then it will break for them. And it's, these people are liars and can't be trusted. How long have they been lying to me, and what did they lie to me about? I cannot trust these people at all. Like, it's
I cannot disagree with that, because there's a childhood friend of my wife's who is as liberal and left-wing and believes in astrology as you can imagine. Even wants her child to undergo sex change therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a freak. Pardon my language. But she also was someone who believed in herbal medicine. That was one of her causes. So when they started saying everyone has to be injected with an experimental gene therapy, she said, well, I say thee nay, it's not that I'm not into that. I'm into, you know, natural healing processes, mm-hmm. you know? And she began to accumulate evidence that they were lying, and lying big, both inflating the numbers of the harm and deflating the numbers of the good that mm-hmm. was allegedly being done by this experimental, untested drug.
Yep, yep.
You see? And you would think any man in the West would object to, if the drug was good, why can't we just volunteer for it?
Mm.
You know, why should it be given to the youth when the youth are not in the group that is at risk for this particular disease, which tends to concentrate on the elderly?
Exactly.
Why are we quarantining the healthy instead of quarantining the sick, as happened in every other epidemic in all of human history? Why is it legal now to take money out of my bank account because I'm objecting to you telling me I can't drive over the border between the United States and Canada? I mean, how did that become legal? You know, and so on and so forth. My theory, now I should say I don't quite agree with my wife. I believe that the people who are lying know that they're lying, that they're doing it deliberately because they don't care about the truth. And I believe that the people who are being lied to are negligent, and that they know they're being negligent, and that they just want to believe because they want to believe. Not because they've thought about it.
I don't know if that's entirely.
If they
fair.
Were told something else, they would believe the something else.
I think that's true. But
I think they're like the Eloi in H.G. Wells' Time Machine, that they're just the herd animals that the Morlocks are eating, are consuming for their own good, and that they don't even know, they don't even realize that whatever they're just being told is just being told to control them. And if they were told something else, if they were told get on your knees and worship Christ, they'd worship Christ. Because they don't, they just want to get along with their neighbors. They have loyalty to the people around them. They don't want to offend anyone.
No, exactly.
That's a perfectly understandable reason to do things. You know, not everyone is rebellious and is a big mouth and wants to offend people by calling them perverts just because they're perverted. You know, and not everyone puts a high value on honesty. More people put a higher value on comfort.
Yeah.
You know, The degree to which they're blameworthy depends on what you think about about being negligent, whether you think they have a duty to learn the truth or not. Now, obviously, you can't expect everyone to know everything. You can't expect everyone to read all the newspapers. Newspapers are boring, and they're filled with lies, you know. So, but I am actually more in your camp than I am in my wife's camp, and it's a point of disagreement between she and I. Or is it she and me? I forget which. I think it's going to break, and I think it's going to break like ice. I think there's going to be kind of a preference cascade where if you're saying something only because everyone around you is saying it, and suddenly the guy next to you is not saying what everyone else is saying, and then you switch to what he's saying, and then the guy next to you switches again, it goes to 2 to 4 to 16 to 32, and you all switch, and it's like a school of fish all changing at once.
Suddenly it changes,
Suddenly it's going to change. And the people who think that a lie gives them power over mankind are going to find out that all it does is enslave them to the father of lies. You know? That's my hope.
Well,
because
no,
my
I,
friend,
I
like I said, I have a living example of my wife's childhood friend who is as extreme a leftist as you'll meet, but she was into herbal medicine and she doesn't believe the COVID, and she started to doubt whether or not Trump was a Russian agent just because it was the same people telling her it.
But this is but the other thing is, once they see through it, they don't go back.
Yeah, like, you can't unsee it once you see it.
All of the movement is in our direction towards the truth. It's slow, I agree, but again, like the I don't know who said it, but it's like going bankrupt. First you go bankrupt slowly, then you go bankrupt all at once.
All at once, right. It's also like the little Dutch boy trying to jam his holes into the dike. Every time on the internet there's another guy who's speaking the truth, the censors have to rush to jam that hole. But they only have so many fingers and so much attention, see? And look at how quickly, in 2 hours, the school board that I mentioned in South Carolina undid years of subtle work. Because, of course, they can't fight in the open. They can't come out in the open and say, yes, we want to groom your children for sexual mutilation. That's our goal. You know,
All they can do
is say, you have to shut up. What you're saying is a conspiracy theory. What you're saying is unacceptable in public. You know, now, the difference between a conspiracy theory and the truth used to be years, and now it's months.
Now it's months or hours, days.
Now it's months or even hours. You see, they can't keep it up. It requires a great effort to make up a falsehood and to make up the falsehood to support the falsehood and to make up the third falsehood to support the second falsehood and then to cover up the crime and then make a cover-up to cover up the cover-up. That takes a lot of effort. And then you have to do that globally. And at the same time, you have to adhere to a system of falsehood where the same person who was your hero yesterday is a villain today. I remember seeing a late-night comedian who was complaining that Donald Trump had just fired someone, and I forget who he fired. I think it might have been James Comey.
Yep.
And the audience applauded because they had just been told that James Comey was Emmanuel Goldstein, that James Comey was the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And the comedian had to stop and explain to them the new think, the thought crime was, oh no, he's actually a good guy. Trump is evil for firing him. You have to boo now. And they obligingly booed. And it was the most naked, silly 1984 gone wrong thing I've ever seen. You know, it's an amusing clip. It's really sad when the mask comes off to these deceptive people. You know. So.
But yes.
That's the other thing. Justice is also easier than injustice, because injustice takes a lot of work to make. You have to try to make it look just when you're doing injustice.
Well, there we go. So
there we go.
There is
hope.
I think
that's a wrap. Let's just say farewell.
I think it is, and there's hope. It ends on a hopeful note, which is always...
ends on a hopeful note, which is not normal for me. So, but our hope is in Christ. Our hope is not going to be in any worldly prince. Don't trust people.
No.
Okay.
That's fair.
Okay.
Well,
in that case,
thank you everyone for joining us, and like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.